Yavos, and the last few weeks we spoke about the incredible influence of the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, how important their instruction was for all of us, how much it has inspired Jewish communities from the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGadola's existence until today. What I'd like to continue with in today's shiur is the lessons of the Anshei Knesset HaGadola. So last week we spoke about the first lesson that our Mishnah teaches us in Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph, which was Hevei Misunim Badin. And as we said, it means you have to be deliberate, calculated in your judgment. You have to be calculated not only when you are in a position of authority and you are able to give someone the answer that they're looking for, but we said as well that one needs to be calculated in the way that they act, in the way that they think, in the way that they speak, in the way that they react throughout life. That is also part of the idea of Hevei Misunim Badin. I know a number of people emailed me for that great article about mindfulness and about paying attention and not multitasking, because that is a great challenge that we are faced with. What I'd like to continue with today is the next two principles that were taught in this Mishnah. Anshei Knesset HaGadola, which is very interesting. After all, they had such a tremendous impact on our lives and on all of Jewish destiny for all eternity. We only find one passage in the Mishnayos of a lesson from the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, and that is our Mishnah. So our Mishnah states three instructions. Number one, Hevei Misunim Badin, which we spoke about. Number two, Heemidu Talmidim Harbe. You have an obligation, and they instituted that we should teach and educate the masses. We should have as many students as we possibly can. And number three, we are taught, Asu Siag LaTorah. You have to make safeguards, you have to make fences in order to uphold the laws of the Torah. Now it's very interesting. The Lubavitcher Rebbe has a beautiful sefer. I drove out to Crown Heights a few weeks ago to purchase the sefer, where he has a compilation, not he has, they put together from his many different writings, a compilation of all of his comments on Pirkei Avos. So I happen to love the insights of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I always find them to be extremely insightful and very powerful, penetrating insights. They're always ones that are relevant to our lives. And here I found something that he says on our Mishnah, which I was very inspired by. The Lubavitcher Rebbe wonders, of all the things that the Anshei Knesset HaGadola could have left over for us, of all the things that they could have taught us, is this really the most important instruction that you can give? Number one, Hevei Misunim Badin. Number two, Heemidu Talmidim Harbe. And number three, Asu Siag LaTorah. Why is it that these were, in particular, the three instructions that they gave us when they handed over the mantle of leadership to the next generation? Why were these the things that they chose to focus on over any other area or aspect of Jewish life? And the Lubavitcher Rebbe goes through a beautiful discussion to explain why he believes this is true. I'll read a little bit inside, but we'll start with an outside description a little bit. Let's just remind ourselves, the Anshei Knesset HaGadola lived at a time, to give the historical context, they lived through the Churban Bayis Rishon, the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. They lived through a world in which they were sent to Galus Bavel. They were sent into exile. In the interim, that is the time when the story of Mordechai and Esther took place. Just to give a context of where we're holding in history. That's when that took place. In between the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni, they were in Paras and Madai, which is Iran. And that's where they found themselves. That's when the whole Purim story played out. And then after 70 years in exile, they now have the right to go back to Eretz Yisrael. Ezra and Nehemiah tried to galvanize the Jewish people that they should all come back on a mass aliyah movement. There was a very, very weak response to that calling of Ezra and Nehemiah. And the Jewish community did not do as they should have. But ultimately, Ezra and Nehemiah got enough people to come back. They successfully built a Beis HaMikdash. And now you have a second Beis HaMikdash that is operational, that is functioning, and that is doing what it is supposed to do. That is the tkufa, that is the life, that is the experience of the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, as we mentioned in previous weeks. Let us continue with what he says. With that background in mind, he says, isn't it strange that the three things that they chose to teach us at this pivotal moment in history were the three lessons of our Mishnah? How can one understand and why it is that a Jew who's living through this very difficult time, in between two Beis HaMikdash being built, in between the destruction of one and the building of the second, in between the Aliyah movement and the Galus Babel, Why are these three messages so critical and so important for us to learn at this time in history? Says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and I think it's relevant even more so today than it was when he wrote this 35 or 40 years ago. Because our world has become more and more, as you'll see, more and more confused, and more complicated, more and more nuanced since 40 years ago. Things were much simpler 40 years ago in certain respects, and things were much clearer. And now the world has become far more complicated. So let's see what he says. Look at the third paragraph. Dar holech v'dar ba, generations come and generations go. V'anshei Knesset HaGedola bo v'karu es haTorah mechadash. The Anshei Knesset HaGedola taught us how to learn the Torah in a generation like the one that they were experiencing, that they were living through. Heim limdu es haDor haChadash sheHisyashev ba'aretz. They taught this new generation that was now coming once again to live in Eretz Yisrael. Ketzad yesh lilmod osa. How they should study the Torah and how they should live by it in the experiences of their coming back to Eretz Yisrael. And they said the following. Shloshos hadvarim she'amru anshei Knesset HaGedola, heim hatzofan, those are the, I guess you say, the guide, those are the, what? The code, so to speak, thank you. Lahavanas hador sheshav la'artzo im aliyas Ezra. They were teaching all those Jews who came back to Eretz Yisrael with Ezra how they were going to have the tools to live through this experience of the new world, of this new opportunity of rebuilding a Beis Hamikdash, of pulling yourself out of Galus and learning how to live again in Eretz Yisrael. Explains the Lubavitcher Rebbe. What was the marked distinction between Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni? And what I find fascinating about this comment is that he gathers two Mamari Chazal that I'm sure many of us have heard in the past on Tisha B'Av or at other times in the year. But I never bothered to think one step beyond what the Chazal say to understand the implication of the statement that they made. Says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Hahevdel Hamashma'uti Bioter. If you really want to boil down the difference between Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni, it can be said as follows. Bein ha'olam ha'yashan shecharivim ha'bayis ha'rishon. Between the old world of the Bayis Rishon, v'dar ha'olim la'eretz Yisrael, and this generation who is now coming up to Eretz Yisrael. Mazel tov to you on the bris. He just made a bris this morning. So, come collect your things. Don't be uncomfortable. V'dar ha'olim la'eretz Yisrael. You spoke beautifully also, really. You should have a lot of nachas.
It's going to be on my stop and I.
What?
I'm just
going
to get some stuff.
That's okay. Mazel tov. V'dar ha'olam le'eretz Yisrael, what was the major difference between the generation of Jews who lived through the old world of the first Beis Hamikdash and now those who are coming back to be rebuilding the second one? He explains as follows. Ha'olam hayashan, the old world, hayachad mashma'uti. It was one-dimensional world, very simple, very black and white. Shachor v'lavan. Black and white, that's the way you say it in Hebrew as well. Hayubo Nevi Elokim. On the one hand, you had Nevi'im who were living. Imagine you go out with your wife one night, you go out with your husband one afternoon, and you're going walking down the street and you bump into Yirmiyah HaNavi and Yecheskel, and you bump into Eliyahu HaNavi, and you have all of these incredible giants and Yeshaya HaNavi walking down the street. It's amazing. That's the world that they were living in the Bayis Rishon. That is what they were experiencing. And he says, Anashim Sha'am Dibaruma Shalolam. These were giants, towering figures who lived in another stratosphere. They were the most incredible Nevi'im that we had the opportunity to be exposed to. V'inchilu lanu es kisvi HaKodesh, they gave us the Nevi'im and Ksuvim as we know them today. At the same time that that's what was going on, that you had Yeshaya and Yirmiyah and Yecheskel, and all of these great Nevi'im walking around the streets and living in our communities, at the same time, Hayubo Nevi'i Habal, Ovdei Avodah Zarah. At the same time, you also had Jews who were serving Avodah Zarah, who were falsely prophesizing, who were Megalei Arayos. You had Jews who were walking down the streets who were living such promiscuous lives, who were living such decadent and despicable lives, shofchei damim, going around and murdering other people, going around and being involved in avodah zarah, in gilui arayos and shvichas damim. Heim chayu ba'olam hayashan, elu litzad elu. Can you imagine? The next door neighbor of Yeshaya HaNavi was a person who used to go out at night to the clubs, who used to during the day be involved in murder. This is the world that was being experienced at the time of the Bayis Rishon. But it was shachor v'lavan. It was clear what choice you were making, who you wanted to associate yourself with. Either I'm going to be in the camp of Yeshaya, of Yirmiyah, of Yecheskel, I'm going to follow them, or I'm going to follow those who are living the most despicable, perverted, dishonorable lives and disgraceful people. That was the choice that every Jew had to make at the time of the Bayis Rishon. Very obvious choices. You looked at a person and you knew immediately whether he belongs to this group or he belongs to that group. That's what life was. He goes on the next paragraph and he says, Ach ha'olam hachadash, we come to Agalas Bavel, and now we come back to Eretz Yisrael. Hutziv oni v'rav meimadi. It's very confusing and extremely complicated. The new world is very nuanced. And he draws a beautiful way to learn this lesson. Why was it that the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed? Chazal tell us. Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim. Very obvious reasons why they're worthy of a destruction. Why was the second Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Sinas Chinam. Says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, just think about it. Sone Chinam, lo nira kemo shofech damim. When you see somebody who's a murderer, you know he's a lowlife. When you see somebody who's involved in Gilui Arayos, you know that that person is a perverted individual. You know that. You don't have to dig beneath the surface. When somebody is a person who's involved in sinas chinam, he says, hu adam min ha'yishuv, he's probably a very civilized person, a respectable human being. Ulai gam ish shel tzura, maybe he's even a great gentleman. Maybe he's even a man of great authority. And yet, behind people's back, this is the way he acts. You don't see it on the surface. Says the Lubavitcher Rebbe what the Gemara is teaching us when it says that the second Beis HaMikdash was filled with sinas chinam. It doesn't just mean sinas chinam, it means that was the confusion of the time. You would see somebody, they look like a good person, looks like an upstanding citizen, looks like a gentleman, but beneath the surface there's so much going on there. And you never knew who you were dealing with. It was an extremely confusing world. That's what was happening in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Next paragraph, Nitan lechanos dor ze b'shem dor ha'arbuvia. You can refer to that generation as the confused generation. How relevant are the words of the Lubavitcher Rebbe today? The confused generation who has the internet, where you can find anybody who will convince you of anything, where you can educate yourself about any subject, and you can have two perspectives that sound equally as convincing about any issue that's going on in our world. A confusing world, a complicated world, a nuanced world, where things seem to be good on the surface, but we don't really know what's good and what perhaps is not. Very hard to differentiate, very hard to distinguish. Yes, we have many factions of Orthodox Jewry who decide today that they're going to do things for the betterment of Klal Yisrael. And I do believe that many of them might be well-intentioned. After all, if we don't make this kind of change, if we don't go in this kind of direction, who knows how much we'll lose? It seems good on the surface, but you just need to dig a little deeper sometimes and see what's beneath it. See what's driving it. What are the motivations? What are the implications? Is this really good? It looks good. But not everything that looks positive, not everything that looks good, is the way it seems in a confusing world. And that, writes the Lubavitcher Rebbe, is what they were dealing with in the days of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And their response was quite clear. We have three instructions of how Jews in times like those can survive. And here goes. Number one, Havei Mesunim Badin, writes in the Lubavitcher Rebbe three paragraphs before the end of the century. Havei Mesunim Badin is the first instruction for a Jew living at a complicated time like that, or a confusing time like ours, I should say. First instruction is, Al lanu lishpot lefi mara ha'inayim. Don't be so naive. Don't be so simplistic. Don't be so innocent and so trusting of people. Don't believe that everything that everyone sells you is always as good as it looks. Because we know that if you just dig a little bit beneath the surface, you will find that there's a lot more there. And the calculation has to be made so carefully. Yesh linhog b'mesinos. You have to be perceptive. You have to be discerning. You have to be discriminating a little bit. Im tabid heitiv, if you look carefully enough, yitachein, it is possible, v'tigala, that you will uncover and you will discover. Dvarim tovim shalosamta leiv aleihem. Maybe you will find tremendous value in people that you never thought you would learn from. Or, he writes, ulai tigala, maybe you will find sakanos shalora isa. You will find yourself falling into associations that you should have nothing to do with. Don't be so naive. That's instruction number one. Havei mesunim badin. Be careful in your assessment of those who you associate with. Be deliberate in how you choose to circle and surround yourself with those who you're going to spend experiences of life with. Number two, you want to live through a time like that and try and have a survival of a Jewish community? He'amidu talmidim harbe. Answer number two is, im bedoros avru yachonu le'istapek be'echad me'ir u'shnai mi'mishpacha. It's true that in generations past it was sufficient to have one member of a family who became a member who was of excellence or of distinction, a very educated person. We created one Navi per town. We had one Yeshaya HaNavi who was walking around, and one Yecheskel. That was good enough. That was enough for people to see, I have the option to follow this charismatic, incredible leader, or I can go the other direction. That was good enough to keep a community going. But he says, when you have such a complicated world, it is not sufficient to have one person standing up and trying to hold up the pennant of Jewish life. And writes the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he says, it's true that it may have worked to have one person, anshei echus v'ruach sheyuchlu la'agia gam l'dargas ha'nevuah. It was good enough when you had one person who was able to be a Navi and to go around town speaking about their values and everything that they believed in. Hare ka'es, he says, but now, hishtanu ha'itim. The world is a very different place. Bidor ha'aravuvia, when you live in a confusing generation, the most important thing that you need to do is lahashkia bekamus. Quantitatively, we need to educate the masses. It's all about the volume. How many people we can reach. You're not looking to have that school of excellence. That's not relevant right now. What we need in a generation like ours is to make sure that at least everybody has a baseline education. That they'll be educated enough to make the right choices and the right decisions in this complicated world. That they'll be nuanced enough to understand that they should not fall in with all of the difficult choices that they're going to have to make. That, says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, is what is so important, living in a generation like that one. Think about the intermarriage rates in our generation. So in New York, we tend not to think about it too much. But we should. Look at the statistics and look at the numbers all over this country. In this confusing world that we live in. In this democracy that we're so blessed to be a part of. Life is very complicated. Life is very nuanced. But look what's happening as a result of us not doing a good enough job educating every single Jewish child all over this country. If we don't give them the tools to make educated decisions that are in line with Jewish tradition, how can we expect anything short of intermarriage and all that comes along with it. And that, says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, is what we need to look for. Not schools of excellence today, but what we need to look for is figuring out how to educate every Jewish child in times like these. And number three, he says, Asu siyag la-Torah. Be'avar, in the past, he says, Hagvulos hayu brurim. The lines were quite obvious. Hatov hayu muchlat v'hara hayu martia. Either you were part of the camp of Yeshaya, Yirmiyah, and Yechezkel, or you had a right to join the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, the Gilei Arayos, and the Shvichas Damim. B'dar HaChadosh, he says, in the new generation, Yesh lahatziv mikadmi b'tichos gvulos kfulim u'mechupalim. We have to work harder to protect and safeguard and secure our community. And we have to do all kinds of activities that will make sure that people clearly know what the lines are and what perhaps they are not. The Beis HaLevi was one of the great Gedolim in the 1800s. He passed away in 1892, which was years before the Holocaust. So he was the famed Rosh Yeshiva of Valazhin. He was the great-grandfather of Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, that we are familiar with, but they had the same name. He was named after his great-grandfather. He ended up being the Rav in Slutsk and then in Brisk. And he said the following comment. In Shir HaShirim, the Pasuk says, L'reach Shemanecha Tovim. The Jewish people are referred to by many endearing, many loving terms in their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And one of the descriptions that is given is, L'reach Shemanecha Tovim, that you are comparable to the Shemen, to the oil. And the Medrash writes there, why is it that the Jewish people are compared to oil? In what way are we considered to be equal or parallel at all to the oil? What is the quality of oil that we try to emulate? Says the Medrash, Mashemen einam isarevim hamashkim. I don't know much about the kitchen, but one thing I do know is, when you have a pot of water and you pour oil into it, the oil will rise. That much I do know. That oil does not fuse, oil does not blend and mix in to the mixture. Says the Medrash, that is what the Jewish people are supposed to be. Mashemen einam isarevim hamashkim, just like the oil does not allow itself to fuse together and to blend with whatever it is that you mix it in. Af Yisrael ein misarvim im b'nei Noach. Our job as Jews is to understand that we have gvulim, to understand that we have boundaries, to understand that there are places that we go and there are places that we must not, that there are activities that we should be engaged in and there are others that we absolutely cannot. It's the essence of a Jew. And said the Beis HaLevi, it's a frightening statement, but he said, this is the way that God set up the world as He told us, Va'avdil eschem min ha'amim. I separated you. I wanted you to be separate. V'im Yisrael ha'yim mekarvim atzmam chalila lahem. If the Jewish people are confused and they decide that they are going to blur those boundaries and they are going to integrate themselves and mix into the big blend of what the world is all about and integrate so far that they lose their own identity, says the Beis HaLevi, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu mechadesh ha'hevdel v'hamachitza. Then we leave it up to God's job to resurrect those fences and to figure out how to make us separate again. How does He do so? Al yidei shemechadesh b'lev ha'amim sina liYisrael. God will make it that all of our friendly neighbors will begin to hate us. And that's a very easy way for the Jews to remember they are not the same as everybody else. Writes the Beis HaLevi, this is not a punishment. It is litovason shel Yisrael. This is made as a reminder for the Jewish people of who they are. Asu siyag la-Torah. Living in a complicated generation comes with tremendous challenges. And one of the things we need to remember to do is to make fences, is to understand that there's a way that we live life and that can never be compromised. in the same time period, a little bit earlier, but the great Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, in 1844, when the Reform had their conference in Germany, in Braunschweig, in 1844 and 1845, so on that occasion they allowed intermarriage. And they said there's no longer a prohibition of intermarriage at all. On that occasion, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter made a comment. Just think about how prophetic his words were. 1844, 1845, almost 100 years before the Holocaust, 90 years before. He said, now that as a Jewish community we have told our constituents that there's no longer an issue of intermarriage, now that we have broken down those barriers, he said, Tachaze, in exchange for that, there will come a time, Sheyasru legoy lihinase liyehudi. There will come a time when it will be against the law to marry a Jew. There will come a time when there will be a law that it will be despicable to marry a Jew. This is Rabbi Yisrael Salanter saying this in 1844. That was his response to the Reform Convention in 1844 when they permitted intermarriage. Va'asu siyag la'Torah. Va'avdil eschem min ha'amim. These are instructions that are given to us by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah because they understood how difficult a life would be living in the confusing new world of a Bayis Sheni and of the Gullus going forward. Living in a democracy where everything goes, where we have a right to choose whatever it is that we want, and nobody can look down upon us for anything. That's difficult. And as a result, the Chachamim had to tell us these three instructions. Number one, have a mesunim badin. Choose very carefully who you associate with. Number two, after you've done that, ha'amidu talmidim harbe. Your major focus should be on educating the masses. And number three, asu siyag la'Torah. Don't ever forget that there are fences. There are boundaries that need to be upheld. There are communities that we have that need to remain as Jewish communities. And if we break down those barriers, said Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, if we begin to forget the values and the virtue of what a Jewish community means, the Ribono Shel Olam will come and have to remind us some other way. There's an incredible medrash on the first pasuk in Sefer Vayikra. The Medrash there goes through an amazing conversation that took place between Moshe Rabbeinu and God Himself. So we're told that Moshe Rabbeinu was the leader of the Jewish people and he led with distinction and with excellence. But the truth is, says the Medrash, Moshe never wanted this. Moshe barach min hasrara. Moshe was running away from it. He never wanted to be the leader, which is why he was the most perfect choice. Because that's who you want as your leader. B'shash Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God calls him in one day and he says, V'ata lecha v'ashlachacha al paro. I have a job for you. You're going to be the one to take the Jews out of Egypt. You got to go down to Egypt, negotiate with Paro, and through all the talking that you're going to do with him, through all the negotiations, you're going to let them free. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, are you kidding me? Lo ish devarim anochi. I don't even know how to present myself. I have no charisma. I'm a kvad peh, I'm a kvad lashon. I don't know how to speak properly. I don't know how to do any of this. This is not for me. Shlach nabiyat tishlach, do me a favor. I'm happy to listen to you, but please send somebody else. And Moshe Rabbeinu is negotiating back and forth 7 days straight, says the Medrash. That he should not have to go and be the one to get the Jews out of Egypt. He just feels it's not his job. He just doesn't know how to do it. And he gives every excuse in the world. And God finally says, Chayecha, I promise you, that in the end of the day, Sof Chalelech, I'm going to end up winning this discussion. So let's just cut out all of the middle part of the discussion. Let's get to the job at hand, the objective, and that is, it's time for you to go down to Egypt. I'm going to help you. I'm going to tell you how to go. And I'm going to join you in this mission down to Egypt. Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, that's the way it is. That's the way it is. Halach v'yamar, he goes down and he says to Paro, God said that I should come here and let you know that it's time to let his people go out of your land. It's time to let them free. They got to go to Israel. Enough is enough. Paro turns back to him and says, "Mi Hashem Asher Eshma B'Kolo, may I ask you, who is this God that you're referring to? I never heard of him." And Moshe Rabbeinu says, oh my, what do I do now? So he starts going back and forth, he's negotiating, and in the end, he performs all of the makos, and he says to God, Kvar asisi shluchusi, I have done my job that you asked me to do, I'm retiring. Halach v'yashavlo. Moshe Rabbeinu says, it's time to retire. I went down to Paro, I spoke to him, I negotiated with him, he gave me a hard time, I did what you asked me to do, I had enough. God says, you think you had enough? You're just getting started. God says to him, Yashavta lach, you think you're finished? Bo el paro, daber el paro, lech el paro, hashkem baboker, wake up in the morning, you're going to do this makkah and that miracle and everything's going to happen, you're going to take them out of Egypt, you're far from done. Moshe says, okay, if that's what you tell me, I'll go again. And he goes down to Egypt again, and he negotiates with Paro, and he brings him another makkah and another plague, and the whole country's being destroyed, and he's going around speaking to the Jewish people, assuring them that they're going to be let free at some point, and he's doing his job. Libasof! After all this hard work, Hotzio mi Mitzrayim, not bad, you know, I was thinking, just a way to put it in our context. Imagine Moshe Rabbeinu is looking for a shidduch now. So he has to write a resume, or he's looking for a job. He wants to apply to another position. So he puts down on his CV everything that he's done in his life. So what would you say? Not bad. He has a pretty impressive life. Libasof, says the Medrash, after all that he did, what has he accomplished? Hotzio mi Mitzrayim. You took millions of Jews out of Egypt. Kara lahem asayam. Not only did you get them out of the clutches of Paro and all of his land, but you then split the sea for them. Harid lahem asaman. Then they were hungry and had nothing to eat. You provided them with this miraculous food from heaven. Then everybody was thirsty and somehow you got water to come out of a rock. Then everybody wanted meat. Somehow Moshe Rabbeinu figures out how to provide them with meat. Everybody's traveling through the desert and they're afraid of all the enemies that are going to attack them. No problem. Moshe Rabbeinu provides them with a cloud. Now you've also built an edifice where God is going to rest His Shekhinah. Pretty impressive. I'll take him as a child. Moshe Rabbeinu, that's what he's done. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, am I finished? Amad v'yashavlo. He says to God, have I done enough yet? I didn't want this in the first place. Let's remember. I didn't ask for this. You forced me to do it. You pushed me along the way. You made me lead the Jewish people the last 40 years. I'm finished. I have no interest anymore. Amad v'yashavlo. And he thinks about going into retirement. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says, oh, you think you're done? Yesh lecha melacha gedola mikol masha asisa. I have a job for you now that is more difficult than anything that I've asked you to do until this point. Now I ask you, what can possibly be more difficult than anything that Moshe Rabbeinu has already accomplished in his life? For crying out loud, he took them out of Egypt. He split the sea. He created Anani HaKabod. He gave them heavenly food. What can be more difficult than that? God says, I have a job for you now that is more complicated and more difficult than anything I've asked you to do until this point. And what is that? Lelamed lebeni tuma b'tahara. Now I have a job for you to teach my children, to teach the Jewish community about living a life in which they can discern between Tuma and Tahara. Now you have to teach the Jewish people how to live a life of Kedusha, how to be able to understand the difference between the way a Jew is meant to live life and the way that all others in the world might be living their own lives, the values that we need to uphold as a people. And God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, that is more difficult. Anyone who wants it, I can email it to you. Don't worry, I'll send it to you. But that is a more difficult job than anything that Moshe Rabbeinu has been asked to do until this point. That's the most difficult job that a Jew will ever have in life. Learning how to have a siyag latorah. Learning how to understand and appreciate the valuable life that a Jew is meant to live, even though sometimes it's complicated. It's not always easy. And it's going to be extremely difficult. And yes, the world is very confusing. And it is extremely nuanced. But that's what God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, this is more difficult than anything else that you've done throughout the duration of your life, throughout the time that you were the leader of the Jewish people. This is the most important and most difficult job that I have ever asked you to do. So, I'd like to just use the rest of the time that we have to discuss the principle that our Mishnah says of He'amidu Talmidim Harbe. It is our duty, it's our obligation to educate as many children as we can. And that is one of the ways that we will survive the exile, that we will survive the difficult times of life. So let's just go through the history of education as far as the Jewish community goes. Traditionally, the educational system was, anybody know? Vishinantam levanecha v'dibartabam. It was a parent's obligation to teach their children all the laws and all the values of Torah. That's the way it worked. What happened if you had a family where the child had no parents? What happened if you had a family where the parents were busy working the fields and they themselves were illiterate? What happened then? Well, those children just were not educated. That's the way it worked. And we find, if you remember, one of the members of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola was Mordechai HaTzadik, correct? He was living in Persia, living in Iran. Mordechai HaTzadik, says the Medrash, in his generation, one of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, in the time of the Bayis Rishon, and then when he goes into Galus, Mordechai HaTzadik was setting up educational facilities. Mordechai was spending his time going around. We all know the Medrash. In the time of the Purim story, he was going there and teaching all the children in Iran. This is what the Gadol HaDor is doing? And the answer is yes. Because he said, I need to tackle the problem. We cannot rely any longer on parents teaching their children. That's not realistic. It doesn't work for every family. And now that we live in Galus, now that we're living in Persia, in Iran, how are our children going to survive? How will they ever make it through the world when they aren't even educated to make the right decisions, when they don't even know what the values of Judaism are all about? And we're told that Mordechai starts this trend of opening institutions, of learning for children. That's what he was busy doing with his time. The Anshei Knesset HaGedola take Mordechai's lead and they say, Hamidu Tamidim Harbi, it's a great idea, this is what we need to do. Otherwise we will never have Jewish continuity. This is absolutely essential. This needs to become the focus of our community. It can no longer be disorganized, arbitrary. We can't rely on every parent teaching their child. We need to have institutions. In the time of the Bayis Sheni, now the Jews come back to Israel, and you have the Anshei Knesset HaGedola giving over this instruction that we need to build educational facilities for our children. Listen what the Gemara says. You have it here. The Gemara tells us a moving story about Yehoshua ben Gamla. How many of us know Yehoshua ben Gamla? Well, we know nothing else about Yehoshua ben Gamla other than this story. And this is worthy on its own of his name being mentioned. Says the Gemara, Biram zachar osa ha'ish latov, baba basra daf chafalef. This man, Yehoshua ben Gamla, should be remembered for all eternity. Why? She'el Malehu, listen to these words. I don't know anyone that we can say this about in our generation. Bless you. Il Malehu, if not for him. Nishtakach Torah mi Yisrael. If not for Yehoshua ben Gamla, the Torah would have been absolutely forgotten. Wiped out. Why? Shebetchila, because originally, if somebody had a father who was educated, the father would teach the child Torah. Then they realized, what do we do with all those children who don't have fathers? So they set up an institution in Yerushalayim. Because it says, Ki mitzion teitzei sora, that's where you're supposed to learn Torah. Then they realized, how can we expect children to make it to Yerushalayim? Not every child has a parent who's available to bring them to Yerushalayim. And Yehoshua ben Gamla spent his life going around the country. and building educational facilities in every single community. This was from the instruction of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. He lived right after them. And we're told that Yehoshua ben Gamla is the one who is solely responsible. She'el Malayhu, if not for him, Nishtakach Torah Meyisrael. The Gemara tells us that Yehoshua ben Gamla was the Kohen Gadol at the time. His counterpart was Shimon ben Shetach, who was the Av Bezdin, who was the head of the Jewish community at the time of Yehoshua ben Gamla's leadership in the Beis HaMikdash. These two great luminaries, these two great dignitaries were fixated on this idea. And the Yerushalmi says that Shimon ben Shetach was going and knocking on doors to get children to enroll in the Beis HaSefer. Sheyiyu tinokas hoch in the Beis HaSefer. Can you imagine? You wake up one day and Rabbi Avadia Yosef knocks on your door and he says, is your child enrolled in kindergarten yet? And Rabbi Moshe Feinstein is by your neighbor's door and that's all he's busy with? Instead of dealing with all the issues of the Jewish community, they said, this is what we need to focus on. All of our energy, all of our concentration needs to be on the kids. Because if we don't educate them, there is no way we will ever survive. And it's for this reason that the Gemara says, El Malehu, if not for him, Nishtakcha Torah Miyisrael. And the Gemara says in Kiddushin about his friend Shimon ben Shetach, Shehechzir HaTorah LiYoshna. These two people together were responsible for bringing and restoring the grandeur of Torah back to where it was supposed to be. This is what they focused on. All by the instruction of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. You go just a few years later, when we have the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and now the Jews are sent into Bavel, and now the Jews are dispersed all over the world. And what are we told on that occasion? Let's read together a Gemara in Maseches Shabbos, Kuf Yud Tes Amud Beis, second side of the page. Amar Reish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Nesiah. Ein ha'olam miskayim ela b'shvil hevel tinoka shel beis rabban. Our entire world stands on the children who are studying in our educational systems. That's what the world stands on. And you understand now what he means. Because he understood that if we don't invest our time and our energy in the educational system, we're gone. We have no future. We will never succeed in this galus. We will never survive. And he makes that comment that the world stands on the learning, on the education of Tinokas Shel Beis Rabban. So much so, listen to this almost outlandish statement. Amar Reish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Nesiah. Imagine, you lived at a time when you experienced the Beis HaMikdash. You feel a devastating loss that you don't have that anymore. Can you imagine how excited you would be if Mashiach would reveal himself? You know what you're missing. It's hard for us to be excited because we don't know what a reality means to have a Beis HaMikdash Bibinyana, to have a Mashiach. But if you were one of those Jews who lived through it and who now is stuck in exile, is there anything that would excite you more than Mashiach coming to your community one day, Eliyahu HaNavi revealing himself and saying, it's time to go back and build a Beis HaMikdash. There's nothing that would compare to that. And yet says Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, when that happens, guess what? E mevatlin tinoka shel beis rabban afilu lebinyan beis hamigdash. When Mashiach will come and reveal himself, and he'll ask for volunteers to come and build the beis hamigdash that we have all been davening for, we will not take our children out of school. We don't have a right to stop our children from studying. Because that's the most important value for the continuity of a Jewish community. Even to build a Beis HaMikdash. Once it's built, they're all welcome to join us. But while we're going through the process, absolutely not. We cannot take that risk. Almost an outlandish statement. And the Gemara then goes further and says, any community She'ein ba tinoka shel beis rabban, if you don't have an infrastructure to build an educational system in your community, says the Gemara, Machriven osa. It deserves to be destroyed. And the Gemara then says, Machriven osa. It should be repudiated and denounced, such a city. What an embarrassment that you can have a Jewish community that has not thought about the education of its children. This is how much the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah reformed the educational system as we know it today. The powerful leadership that they had is what has kept the Jewish community alive ever since. He'emidu talmidim harbe is the most important value that we need to think about. I have a letter here that I was given 2 years ago by a friend of mine in Los Angeles, Eli Reisman. Actually going to be by him this coming Shabbos. And this letter is so inspiring. I have the copy of the original handwritten letter. It's an amazing, amazing letter. Written by a group of Jews who survived the Holocaust, who were stuck in the city called Częstochowa, somewhere in Europe. I don't even know where it is. And he dug up this letter recently because his grandfather is mentioned in the letter as one of the leaders of that community at the time who were trying to figure out how they can survive and where they're going to go from here after they were all displaced after the years in the war. So they write a letter to the Jews who are living in Tel Aviv, asking them to try and be helpful, to get them papers or to raise money or to figure out how to move all of these people who survive to Eretz Yisrael or to Tel Aviv, wherever it might be. The letter is written on Yom Gimel Shvat Shnas Tav Shin Hei. And he says, on that day, Baruch Hu HaRotzchem HaGermanim Me'irenu. They give a description of exactly how their city was destroyed. And they write, we asked ourselves, what should we do? We were all in the camps. Now we have all been liberated. Now we have nothing left to our names. And everybody had the question, what are we going to do? So we decided that we should all stay together. After all, we were all from the same community. And we went and we found a place where all of us can live together. And this is where we're up to, he says. We have, he says, put together a Vad Kihila, which means, I guess, a municipality. I don't know exactly how you refer to that. And he says that the people who are in charge are Reb Noach Eidelist and Reb Yechiel Landau and Reb Heschel Reisman, who is the grandfather of Eli, and Lipman Reicher is the Gizbar. He's in charge of all the money. And everybody has their own jobs, and this is what's going on here. And they send a letter to Tel Aviv to ask that they should be helped. Listen what they say. Kibalnu Rishayon, Eitzel Rosh Ha'ir. We spoke to the local municipality and we got permission to have a house which can be used for our needs, our communal needs. And he writes, Va'achar Kashiyim Gidolim, after a lot of very difficult labor, Ala biyadeinu lasos mikvah imam batyos. We were able to build a mikvah here with showers for everybody to use. Not only that, in that building we were also able to create a mitbach kshera. We were able to make a kosher kitchen, which is a soup kitchen that all the people of our community can come and use. And then he says, listen to this, unbelievable. We have built a Jewish school, avur yiladim. Do you know that we have built a school for our children? Sheledavonenu, that much to our dismay, we don't even have. We don't have any children. All of our children were killed. But we've built a school for our children that we don't even have. That's what a Jewish community is. That's what we always focused on. That's what the Jews in Częstochowa after the war and every single last one of their children, he says, there wasn't a single child left. This is the original letter. He writes to his friends in Tel Aviv, we have no children, but guess what? We have built a school. For who? I don't know. But we cannot have a Jewish community without a school. It just cannot be. That reality does not exist in our understanding of what a Jewish community is. Were the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah not incredibly successful in giving over those principles of how Jewish community life is going to survive throughout the exile? This is what it always has been. But there's one more thought when we look at the wording of this Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us it is important, Midu Talmidim Harbe. It is important that we try and educate as many students as we can, and the Mefarshim are bothered. If I was going to choose the word for education, I would have said Vilimdu. We have an obligation, a responsibility as adults, as leaders of our community, as parents, to be melamed our children. What does it mean, he'amidu? What does it mean to stand up our children and our students? And Rav Soloveitchik so beautifully explained that what it means is that it's not good enough to educate our children. How do we know when we've been successful in educating our children? How do we know that we've given over the values properly? It is only when he'amidu, when we've gotten our children to a point where they can stand on their own two feet and be independent, when they can make their own decisions, when they're able to be self-sufficient, when they're able to look at the world and understand, what should I be doing? What is the right moral choice that I should be making? He'amidu. It's not good enough to be melamed our children. It's not good enough to teach them. We have to go much further beyond that. And we need to make sure that we make them be able to stand up. Leha'amid means to make them stand on their own. I brought here a translation of a drasha there of Soloveitchik gave in Yiddish. I believe it was translated by Rabbi Basil Herring from the community here. And it's a long drasha, but this is just one piece of it that's so beautiful and it's relevant to what we're studying here. You can read the first paragraph on your own, but look at the second one. Rav Soloveitchik says, I have students in the yeshiva who have sharp minds and who can repeat my shiurim verbatim, exactly the way I gave them. But of what use is that, he asks. It is only when I hear them using their own formulations that I can tell if they truly understood what I have said. Education is more than just repeating the Rebbe's words. That doesn't mean you have educated your child. Education doesn't mean being able to repeat what I've heard from someone else. It means internalizing the messages that I've been taught and understanding how I could apply them on my own to the world that I inhabit, to the experiences of my life. He'emidu talmidim harbe is the instruction given by the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. You know, for thousands of years, the practice has been all over the world that we bless our children. Yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim v'chimenashe. We want that our children should be like Ephraim u'Menashe. And many have wondered, why is it that of all the great personalities of our history, why is it that we single out and we choose Ephraim u'Menashe to be the ones that we want our children to emulate? Why are they the paradigms? What is so special about them? Many answers are given to this question, but one that always resonated with me is the following. And with this, we'll close. My grandfather used to tell us all the time, my father's father, Rabbi Melech Schechter, he used to tell us the story about when he was a Rav in the Bronx, he had no money to his name at all. And he had to make my father's bar mitzvah in his shul. But he couldn't afford to make a bar mitzvah. So what did they do back then? If you were very wealthy, you made a kiddush with herring. If you were simple like my grandfather, you made a kiddush probably with just kichel. I don't know. But that's what he did. He made a kiddush after davening in honor of my father's bar mitzvah. So he said the whole community came to wish him mazel tov. And the local conservative rabbi is walking home from his shul. And he passes by a large crowd of people outside. And he asks, what's going on? Why is everybody here? And they told him, well, Rabbi Melech Schechter is making a kiddush in honor of his son's bar mitzvah. So he says, oh, we have a nice relationship. I'll be happy to go in and say mazel tov. So he stops into the shul, and he goes over to my grandfather, and he says, mazel tov on your son Herschel's bar mitzvah. But I want to give you a bracha. And the bracha that I give you is that I hope at some point in your life, your son Herschel will not be known as Rabbi Melech Schechter's son. I hope that you will be known as Rabbi Herschel Schechter's father. It's an amazing bracha. That's what he told my grandfather. And it was not long after that, my grandfather was a pretty famous personality in his own right. And it wasn't long after that that my grandfather said he was so proud that nobody remembered him for his own accomplishments anymore. And everywhere he went, he was introduced as Rabbi Herschel Schechter's father. And he said there's nothing that could have made him more proud as a parent than that. And he would get up and speak at our simchas, and he would give over the blessing of the conservative rabbi, and he always would tell us as grandchildren, I eagerly look forward to the day when I'll be walking down the street and people are no longer going to remember who I am, and people won't even introduce me as being Rabbi Herschel Schechter's father. I hope they'll forget who he is too. And I hope they'll introduce me as the grandfather of my accomplished grandchildren. That's the bracha that my grandfather gave all of us all the time. He used to speak to us about it all the time. And that's what it means, Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim v'Menashe. Ephraim and Menashe were born into a family of great people. They were children of great people. But they were not satisfied with that. Ephraim and Menashe never wanted to go down in history as being the B'nai HaShvatim. And they elevated themselves, and they elevated way past the expectation. And they ultimately became the Shvatim themselves, as we're told in Chumash, Ephraim and Menashe, Kiruven v'Shimon Yiuli. They were counted among the Shvatim. They outshined their parents. They were more accomplished than anyone ever expected them to be. That's the greatest gift we can give to our children. When we not only educate them, but when we give them the independence, when we give them the skills and the capacity and the competence to be able to accomplish so much in their life that they can stand on their own two feet. Hevei Mesunim Badin is instruction number one. He'emidu Talmidim Harbe, instruction number two. It's not good enough to educate our children. We need to allow them and to enable them to accomplish great things on their own. Laha'amidotam, we have to be able to make them stand on their own, to be able to deal with the challenges that they will be faced with when their parents are not going to be there for them. And number three, a key to Jewish survival is Asu Siyag LaTorah. Every Jewish community needs to always remember that va'avdil eschem min ha'amim. We were expected to live life in a very different way than all other communities, than all other societies. And like Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, when we break down those barriers, when we forget who we really are and the values that we are meant to uphold and live by, the Ribono Shel Olam has to unfortunately go and look for other venues to remind us and to make sure that the effective way that Jewish community will continue to be separate, to make sure that that is something that is always of paramount importance, that is something that we always focus on and teach our children and teach our communities. These are the lessons given by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, and as the Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote, there is nothing that is more powerful than these three lessons, because in fact they are the guidebook for Jewish communities for all eternity, in all the years of our exile. Once again, today was the last in our series.